Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia, it's time for Sandy Springs Business Radio. Now, here's your host.
This episode of Sandy Springs Business Radio is brought to you by VR Business Sales Atlanta, guiding business owners and buyers through successful transitions with trust and expertise. Visit VRBizWorld.com or call 678-470-8675 to learn more. Now here's your host, Ramsey DeCloosh.
All right. Thank you, Lee. And with us today is Mr. Jeff Khalil, who is another VR owner, but not in Atlanta, and with incredible background. So I cannot do justice to introductions. So I'm going to, Jeff, allow you to introduce yourself. First of all, happy holidays, Jeff. Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Ramsey. I do appreciate it. It's good to see you again, too. Thanks for having me on the show.
Awesome. So why don't you tell us a little bit, go back a little bit, because your background is very exciting and interesting. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us what you've done with your life and where are you right now?
Sure. So I guess to get started, you know, I'll take you back to the days of little Jeff just briefly. But, you know, when I was growing up, I wanted to be an astronaut. I thought going into space and going to Mars and seeing the universe was a cool thing to do, you know, as any other kid would want. And so as I, you know, was getting older and going through school, math and science was always, you know, my favorite subjects. I loved anything to do with it. I used to build a lot of rockets and little models for spacecraft and things. And so my mind was always occupied with that. But when I went to college, it turned out I needed some help to fund school. So I joined the Army Reserves, got the GI Bill, and went to school on that. I was able to get my nuclear engineering degree. And along the way, I had the chance with the organization I was a part of through ROTC that we had lunch with an astronaut one time. And I had asked him, I said, you know, that's what I want to do. What would I have to do to be an astronaut someday? And he said, well, there's three things that you need. And little did I know at the time this was goal setting, lesson 101 for me, right? But what he said was you need to have a high-tech degree, you need to be an officer in the military, and you have to have flight experience. So those became my goals. So as I was going through college, I focused on nuclear engineering as my degree because that was at the time that was the highest tech degree field that I could find. I was in the reserve, so it was a matter of becoming an officer. So I joined ROTC and was on my way to get commissioned in that. So the next hurdle I had was getting my flight experience. So as it happened, I ended up getting commissioned into the Army as an aviator. And I went off to fly Kiowa Warrior helicopters, which is a reconnaissance helicopter back in the day. And that was, you know, I was on my way, but as life would have it, I never had the chance to go on and do the Army astronaut program like I wanted to, but I ended up having a lot of great experiences through the military. And along the way, I had the chance and I was recruited by companies out of corporate America.
Before you go to corporate, let me tell you something. I was thinking about it as you're talking, Jeff. You were the first nuclear engineer I talked to. And I feel so dumb talking to you. I have no idea what to ask you. I'm looking forward to the conversation, but I'm kind of a little scared right now because I knew a lot about you, but hell if I knew you were a nuclear engineer, which now I feel so dumb talking to you. But go ahead, keep going.
No worries. Well, that's why I like the math, which we'll get into later here as we get into more of the meat of the show, which is talking about business valuations and how can we improve that and so on. But that's where that background comes from, right? So as I was going through my career, you know, I ended up leaving active duty Army, went into the private sector, worked for an aerospace and defense industry contractor, and I helped them with refurbishing aircraft from the Department of Defense and putting those aircraft back into service. So in between all that, I started to dabble in this thing we call entrepreneurship. And I started first by flipping a few houses here and there. This was in Texas. Central Texas. And as I was building up my little portfolio of real estate, I would have people come to me and ask me, you know, here and there, well, oh, that's interesting. How do you do that? I've always thought about doing a deal like this, or I've been wanting to start a business of some kind. And I had a couple of other smaller franchises. I had a TCBY yogurt and Mrs. Fields cookies that I had picked up along the way too. So I was a pretty busy guy. I had my corporate job, which required a lot of travel, plus the programs that I managed. I was in the reserves still, so I still had that commitment every month and every year. And then I had my side business where I was doing some property management, some property flipping, and then running these two franchises. So I was pretty busy, and people wanted to know, how was I able to do it? So what I did is I had a, I would always go to Denny's on Saturday mornings down there, and I'd get there early, like 5:30, 6 a.m. I get my eggs and coffee and I take my little laptop and I would just plan out my week. I was very disciplined about what needed to be done and try to make my agenda. And so I would tell folks, well, if you want to talk about what you got, come meet me on Saturday at Denny's. That's the only time I really have. And let's see what you do. So as time would go by, we outgrew the corner booth. Two people turns into four, turns into six, and so on. So the lender, the bank where I did a lot of my deals from, they had a conference room. They let me use that room for a while that held about 15 people. We outgrew that. And then eventually there was a fellow that had a barbecue restaurant with an event center, held about 50 or 60 folks. And we did a trade out where I was able to host my meetings there in exchange that I would encourage folks to, buy the from the menu for the meetings that we held. And it worked out really good. At the peak of it, we had about 60 people a month that would come down for the weekly meetings. And it was a range of everything related to entrepreneurship. It was basically like entrepreneurship 101. Most of them wanted to learn real estate, but others had, ideas of starting their own business, or they had a business. They wanted to learn how to grow it. I would introduce them to, the professionals in our industry, like the lenders, the CPAs. I kept the gurus out. I mostly focused on the education and how can you become an entrepreneur. And what I recognized right away is that people were doing this because their motivations were they wanted to change their lifestyle. They had passion behind helping, their kids go to college. Maybe they wanted to change the trajectory of their lives. And most importantly, this was before, during, and after the recession in 07 and 08 when the real estate market crashed. So a lot of people, their economy had really changed, and a lot of people went upside down. And so they're looking for a way to, change that dynamic. And they saw entrepreneurship as a way to get there. So that's what the flavor of the club was. And I really enjoyed, helping people and seeing people find those successes that translated into helping their families live a better life. So to fast forward that, our industry started to lay off around 2014 as troops were getting withdrawn from Afghanistan and Iraq, and the defense spending went down. So as our industry started to contract, I was worried about a layoff. So I ended up transitioning from Texas back here to St. Louis in Missouri, where I'm from originally. And after I got here, it turns out they laid us all off anyways. But those entrepreneurship conversations just seemed to follow me. It seemed like everywhere I went, somebody wanted to talk about real estate or starting a business or something of that nature. So one of the things I did in my corporate job is I did M&A work, mergers and acquisitions work. And so I had a, a background in that as well. So I just thought, after having all these conversations, and I had, and as you know, or folks on the show here don't know, VR is a business broker franchise. So I had spoken with the folks there at VR a few years prior just to look for a veteran-friendly business opportunity. And so I ended up, I called them back and I just said, hey, if you don't have an office or a franchise in the St. Louis area, I'd be interested in taking a look at that. And with that, that was, going into 2015 and then going into 2016. And I ended up opening up my VR office here. And one of the things that I ended up specializing in is business valuations. I got my certification through the ISBA, which is the International Society of Business Appraisers. And got my certification right about the time COVID started. So, kind of had the time to sit down and focus on that then. Not that much else was going on. But I'd been doing, pretty detailed valuations prior to that. And I knew what it looked like in my M&A portion of my prior career. So I just wanted to bring something that was a little bit more storytelling to the table, as opposed to some of these generic broker opinion of values or broker price opinions that most people provide. And that's what you get. I want to be able to show you not only what I think the value of your business is, but explain to you why. And lots of times you can't tell that story when you get a generic value from a basic equation like a multiple of something. So that's where I started to differentiate myself in that. And so that's kind of where I'm at now. And then, as you know, for VR, as the franchise office goes, I do their corporate training for new franchisees and I help bring them on board and give them the first taste of the Kool-Aid, so they get a sense of what is it like to be a business broker. And then I'm there as just their ongoing advisor. So that's where
Yeah, I
I'm.
trust me, I don't envy you with that one. You had to put up with me and with Claudia for, a few days. So I don't envy, you having to do this, but I appreciate everything you've done. But I mostly appreciate your time and service, and thank you for your service. We all appreciate it, of course.
Thank you.
So,
Yeah, I
Jeff,
had
before we go
35
into
years.
the
Yeah, just real quick, Ramsey. I'd had 35 years altogether, and I retired as a lieutenant colonel. So,
That's
it's
incredible. That is absolutely incredible. What an honor to be talking to you, first of all. I've known you now for a little bit, but the more I hear your story, the more I learn more about you, which is incredible. And what you studied kind of makes me a little bit nervous talking to you, but it is what it is.
all good.
Before we go into, different valuation, all this stuff, I've done merger acquisition work for the past 20 years, and now I do more for, smaller businesses and, owning my own office. So a little bit different. Jeff, what I found out, what I worry about is so many businesses have no idea what the value of the business is. And more important is when I ask 10 people, any meeting, how many people know the value of your house? And they all raise your hand. Absolutely, they know the value of the house. So same 10 people, how many people know the value of their business? Actually, 11 people raise your hand saying, I don't know the value of my business, which is kind of scary because in some instances, it's the second largest investment you have. And in some instances also, it's the largest investment you have. And not knowing the value of it is kind of scary for a lot of reasons in my book. So what are your thoughts on when should person understand the value of the business? When should start looking into this, and how easy is it to get the value for your business?
Yeah, ideally, when you're like, let's say you're planning a trip and you want to go, say, from, well, we're in some place cold right now because we're having this mini snowstorm going on. But let's say that you want to travel from New York to California, whatever it is you want to do. Well, there's some planning that you do, beforehand. What do I need to pack? What's my checking list look like? Where am I going to go? Where am I going to stay? What's my mode of transportation, right? And so as you're making those pre-planning, and maybe you got to take off work, maybe you got to coordinate for someone to care for the house, the yard, the dogs, whatever, while you're gone. Maybe you've got some other family responsibilities, like someone has to care for or check in on mom and dad, so on. As you think about how you plan for that trip and all of the pre-work, then the work of the actual execution. So now you got the family in the car and you're on the road. Well, we got to stop for restroom breaks, we got to stop for gas, got to spend the night somewhere and all that. As you're doing that kind of detailed planning, that same level of detailed planning should go into your business plan. And you want to have that pre-planning of what is it that I'm going to do with this business in, say, 10, 15, 20 years, if that's my, outlook, because you're not going to be there forever. Something's going to happen, whether it's the economy, whether it's your health, whether it's external, something more internal like family, something's going to cause you to not be able to do that business anymore. So when you're doing your business planning, and I know it's probably the last thing you want to think about, or even the last thing that comes to mind, but somewhere on that checklist should be exit plan or exit strategy, or what is my out of the business scenario going to look like? So I would say that the short answer to that question is the day you plan the business, you should also be planning what that exit's going to look like.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, I tell you, my experience is anytime you're doing your strategy for next year, you really should have the value, understand the value of your business. So what are you basing it on, right? And how are you going to grow the business? The value of the business makes a lot of sense to do that. So there's never a bad time in my book to do valuation for your business, not because you're always going to sell it, just to understand if something happens to me today, or like you said, or, God forbid, a divorce, death, or anything like that, understand the value. Now, there's another conversation we can have about what should you do to prepare if something like this happens, and, prior to that. But right now, we're going to focus just on valuation of a business, right? So, and now understanding this, I know in valuation, and I get asked that a lot, so what's the difference between this valuation with the, I got a valuation last year from this guy, or my CPA, or, my pastor at church told me this is my business is, you hear it from everybody, right?
Your
So,
Uncle
tell
Fred.
me,
Yeah, your Uncle Fred told you.
my Uncle Fred, I love Uncle Fred. He's around all the time when you need answers, right? But what's the right way of getting valuation? I mean, I don't want to, I'm a small business owner. Let's start with that. Well, I don't want to spend a lot of money on evaluation, or shouldn't spend money on evaluation. What's the fastest, best way to get, like, run-of-the-mill valuation? And how do we go up from there? And why should we even go up from there?
Yeah, so there's a lot to open from that, right? So a lot of business owners assume that they need the value need a business valuation when it's like a critical moment in the business. So for example, there's a health issue with the owner. They believe that the solution is they have to sell the business so that the owner can step out and take care of their health, and the buyer comes along and now we need a valuation. Or there's a corporate change of some kind. The board of directors are either someone's being bought out, someone's being brought in. Maybe it's part of a succession plan, and it's time for junior to step up, or someone else in the family has decided that they're ready to take over the family legacy, and the board's been looking for a while. Whatever that emotional event is that they typically or stereotypically might think that, hey, we need a business valuation. There are those needs and there are those instances, and you want a valuation that is going to speak to the purpose of the event. A valuation will have certain premiums and discounts assigned to it in the course of developing it that are determined by the purpose of that valuation. So you can have a valuation for a bankruptcy or a partner dispute, and that valuation might be looking a little different because maybe there's some animosity among the staff. Maybe there's some issues with paying vendors and payments are late. And maybe that's part of the issues that are driving the scenario around this business and why the partners are not getting along. So when you have, like a negative scenario around a business, those discounts might be bigger and you may not have any premiums to assign. Whereas if you've got a business that is demonstrating very strong brand loyalty, very strong customer loyalty, you've got a high degree of highly motivated and excited workforce, and people love to work for your company. You will find that you can beef up the premiums on some of the goodwill characteristics of a business. So there's a lot of reasons why a valuation can range in value and why it can be different, and what the purpose of that valuation is will determine a lot of that too. But what I try to share with business owners is, you don't have to wait for the emotional event to come around and say that now I got to get a valuation. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? A valuation should be part of just your regular course of business. And an annual valuation is probably enough to give you an idea of a lot of things. It can tell you if you're on track to reach that long-term goal for your exit strategy. It can highlight areas where you might be bleeding money or bleeding value from your business. And it might also show you areas where, hey, I'm doing really well in this, and this has really given me a big plus on my valuation. What other things can I do to get a better valuation out of this? But the valuation should be more than just a number. Lots of times, a valuation that you get, it could be a range or it could be a specific number, but it should be something that gives you that additional information, such as here are the detractors or the things in your business that are holding the value back. And here are some things in your business that are actually making your valuation, more attractive. And understanding those things is what a good valuation and a good business advisor can interpret for you. So that's, I think, if it is one good message out of all of this, the valuation isn't something that you do just because you have to. The valuation should be a tool that you use as part of your overall business management. I mean, you're as a business owner, you're looking at financials, you're looking at work schedules, you're looking at product quality. Why not look at the value of your business in much the way that you look at these other metrics in your business too?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think the valuation, especially the ones that are a little bit more thought through by somebody like yourself, who is certified valuator, helps a business really directionally, and they can use a part of their writing their strategy for the year next year or the five, whatever strategy, about a 3 year strategy or 5 year strategy, because you can talk about, what's good about your business. Here are some areas you can, expand on or get better at, so you can get a better valuation of the business, right? So, because I tell you, and I'm sure you've dealt with it with the amount of years you've been doing it, especially with small business, is the heartbreaker for me is when I'm talking to somebody who's about to retire and he said, listen, I need $3 million. I had a guy, $3 million to retire. I said, okay, great. Well, let me, let's do kind of valuation. And it was way, way under that. And he said, I cannot retire yet. And he has cancer, he has issues. So at that point, kind of woke me up and said, how do you kind of preach to small businesses? Get a valuation, understand who your business is. Don't go blind running your business because it's just, blind leading the blind. If it's your stock portfolio, you know exactly where it stands every day on your
Yeah, that's what I
phone.
was going to say. Yeah, you
On
look
your
at.
house, you know exactly where the house, goes. And the house, really, there's not much you could do except put a pool, get $15,000 extra, right? There's not much, paint it and get another $2,000, whatever. But a business is a completely different entity. Business is a completely different animal for, what you have now. Contracts, so much goes into business valuation. So how do, is there a way for a business owner to kind of say, okay, I think I'm here or I think I'm there in valuation. And, what are these things? Kind of explain valuation, the ABCs of it, just simple, the simple valuation. What does it look like? What should a business owner look like, look for?
Yeah. So say you're a small business owner and maybe you're 2, 3, 4, 5 years, give or take, into your business, and you have a sense of what your business does. You've got a sense of the cash flow. You have a sense of what your profit margins might look like. And you probably know, a good handful of your customers. Maybe you know those customers by name. You know your vendors, you know who some of your contractors are, and so on. So you're humming along in your business and you feel like things are great. And somewhere in the back of your mind, you either, hear a show like this, or you come across an article somewhere and they talk about business value, and you think, oh, my business is probably worth $1 million. Then you go and you get the valuation done and find out that it falls short of that number. Well, when you're a few years into your business, hey, that's okay. That's information. If you don't agree with it, then dig into the numbers and understand where the numbers are coming from. Once you understand how the value is determined, then you know what to go in and tweak. Now you know what to go into your business and make adjustments on. But in that scenario, like you said, with the older gentleman who's, at the end of his 20, 30 year business career, and he's ready to sell, and he's got to sell because, he's got to leave and take care of himself. Your runway to turn that around and try to find that value that you want becomes a lot more difficult. So, as with anything, like you said, you might know the value of your house, the value of your stock, and we all watch gas prices every day. And I'm sure that on some level, we're all paying attention to grocery prices and things like we have a sense of those things. Then we go out, we spend the money, and we realize here's exactly what that looks like. Your business valuation as a business owner should be that same thing. You should have that regular pulse of what is the value of my business. Now, it doesn't have to be the rocket science. Like on any random Tuesday, you shouldn't be like, oh, my business is 1,547,067 cents, right? But you should know that not only is my value based on past performance, but I've got these plans in place. I've got some tactics or some strategies that are being implemented today that will add value in the future. And if those come to fruition, then I can anticipate that my value is going to be X at this future point in time. So the valuation should be looked at as like a living metric, a live metric. And if I was the small business owner, I would make that part of my annual assessment. And that annual assessment would be, what is the value of my business? And what are my goals, short term, long term, medium term, and long term? And then I would weave in those value drivers in that valuation to make sure that those are part of those goals. That way, next year, when I do my next assessment, I would naturally assume that my valuation would go up. But if my valuation doesn't go up, and maybe it dips or maybe it stays flat, now I know that, hey, maybe I didn't implement the right things, or what were the things that caused that valuation to not move the needle, if you will. But it certainly is an indicator, and it's an indicator that you want to have some visibility on.
Great. Jeff, I don't want to kind of talk a little bit about the process of, but one thing that I found with valuation is when businesses at any level, right, any size business, they keep their financials in order, right? If they use CPA or bookkeeper or however they use, will help with the valuation be more accurate, right? And they may lose actually money if they don't really do that, because we need to be able to kind of dig into all your spending, all your personal spending, and to get to really good valuation. So, and hopefully they have years under their belt. Now, with valuations, of course, there are levels of valuations, and you know, the one that scares me the most is when people only get valuation to sell the business, right? Because they may go to three, four, five brokers, 10 brokers, and they may have 10 different prices. We've talked about that multiple times. Why does that happen? Why do you get, I mean, if valuation is a valuation, why would 10 brokers give you 12 different price, different valuations?
Yeah, sure. So let me answer that by sharing a couple of stories. So first, going to be an army story, and Ramsey, you know me, I'm always full of army stories,
I know.
but there's a moral to it at the end, right? So as an aviator, we have to have certain weather to fly. Even in the military, you got to have certain weather to fly. And in the general sense, when we're going out just doing some training or just some normal, kind of day to day, I would say flying and just building up our hours and getting in a little bit of experience along the way. If you're at a certain airport and let's say there's a thunderstorm nearby and the clouds are low and it's just not looking good, you can't really see any sunshine and there's forecast for rain. Well, if you can't fly based on the conditions or based on the report that you've got for the type of aircraft that you have, I'm not going to get into all that, but different aircraft can fly in different weather conditions. But let's say that you've got some minimums here. There's this thing we call in the aviation community shopping for weather. So you're at this airport, you see the weather is what we call skoshy, or it's not great, but it's such that it falls below the minimums you need and you can't take off. So what you do is you call another airport that might be in your region, but their weather report is a little bit better. And maybe that weather report exceeds the minimums in such a way that that allows you to take off. So you file a flight plan using that weather report and you say, I'm going to travel from here to there under this weather guideline. It doesn't mean that the weather that you're at is going to change. You're just using some other weather report. And you're not supposed to do that, but there are pilots that will do that. The valuation is much the same way. You go to appraiser A or broker A, and they give you a number and you don't like it. So you go to the next one and you go to broker until you find a number that you like. Here's the thing. A valuation, I tell everybody this, we probably had this conversation too. You can get 10 appraisers in a room and give them all the same data, all of the valuation formulas that are out there, and say, give me a value for this business. Out of those 10 appraisers, you're going to get 11 different answers. No one's going to give you the same number. And even in there's going to be a range. You're going to have, it's going to be like a bell curve. You're going to have some guys that are really low, some guys that are really high, and then some folks in the middle that might be within a ballpark of each other. The thing about the valuation is that the valuation methods, the approaches, the methodologies, those are textbook. You don't, there are formulas. It's kind of like Y equals MX plus B, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. The formulas are the formulas. Those, by the way, are not valuation formulas. I don't want people going out trying to calculate that. But just as the example, is that those formulas are locked in. Like that's the math. What's different is two things. The data set that you get. So, okay, if we all agree that we've got the same data, and the data is tax returns, income statements, and balance sheets. If we can agree that we've got the same data, then the only other thing after that that can change are the assumptions. Well, I might go to one chart with a table and do some left, right, up, down and pick a number based on my opinions, based on how I interpret the numbers. And that's my assumption is that, well, we're going to go with this number. Someone else across the table from me, she might go through the same thing and pick a different number from a different chart, from a different table. However, those assumptions are weighed in on the valuation is now where that subjectivity, that opinion-driven side of the valuation kicks in. And now that's where we get into the discussion because we can't debate the math. We can't debate the data. Okay, I have had people, for example, I had a SBA loan recently where bank was trying to get this deal done. It was around $4 million. I do the third-party independent business valuation appraisals for those banks. they couldn't figure out where the value of the assets lied. Now, I do business appraisals. I'm not an asset appraiser specifically, but I use the information from the balance sheets. I told them that based on the information that you gave me, which again, we don't dispute the data. If that's what you want, that's what I'll crank. But when I told them that the value of the business was driven by the assets listed on the balance sheet, all of a sudden the owner and the seller come back to the table and say, "Oh, wait, we have different asset reports here that we failed to give to the bank. Can we still use those?" And so they provided this, authentic sheet of a printout of all of the assets that belong to the business. But what they did is they went back through and there were some vehicles that weren't going to transfer. There were some tools that were not going to transfer. There were some private things that belonged to the owner that were not going to transfer. But we got a good list of the things that were going to transfer. And once we reconciled that list, then it was enough of a change that it justified a revision to the valuation that now the underwriter at the bank said, "Now this makes a lot more sense to us." And then they were able to get that deal through. So when you're looking at this, it's a matter of understanding what is consisting within the deal, but also too, how does that value get interpreted by the parties that are involved? If it's just the business owner and it's a routine, like they're doing it annually, maybe semi-annually, they know what is going on. There's a plan behind it. There's strategy, maybe some marketing plans, maybe some product development, things like that. A new sales push, whatever. They know what's going on. But when you got a sale going on, you don't know what's going on with the buyer. You may not know what's going on with the seller. That valuation is the only point where they have to come together and agree on things like what are the assets or what are we offering for goodwill. But I'll add to that, valuations are confidential, and we haven't really touched on it yet here. But whenever you go out to get a valuation done, if you're the one asking for it, it should be confidential to you. If you just want to know the value of your business, you don't have to tell anybody unless you have an obligation, maybe to share the information with the board or with a partner. But that's your number and it doesn't go anywhere. Appraisers do not take that information and publish it on a website somewhere. The government doesn't see it. Secret organizations don't see it. That's just a report between you and that appraiser. When you're doing the deal through a bank and it's part of an SBA loan, then it depends on the scenario, but it depends on who's buying it. Now, the bank is the client, the bank is the customer for that appraisal. But if the buyer is paying for it, then the buyer's going to be privy to the value. If the seller's paying for it, then the seller's going to be privy to the value. Between all those parties, they have to decide if they want to share that value or not. I would say most of the times they do because everybody wants to know if the offer is going to get approved by the SBA underwriters. But that's a scenario, or that's a special case there. But in general, when you get the valuation done, that's just a number for you. What you want to do with that number, though, is that as you're approaching your exit strategy milestone, maybe it's 20 years in business, maybe it's a certain revenue goal you had, maybe it's a certain life marker, like maybe you want to, when you're 65, you want to sell the business, whatever. That valuation then becomes your tool to know what can I expect the market, these buyers, to come to me and make me offers at? As long as you're getting offers that are around that number and above, then you've done all the right things. But if you're getting offers that are low or someone's intentionally trying to lowball you or pressure you into a sale, a good valuation is something that's defendable. You can hold your ground. You can plant your feet and say, "Nope, I'm sorry. My business is worth this as much as the day is long because here's all the things we've been doing for the last 10 years. And now this valuation is justifiable." So there's a lot of ways that you can get leverage from a good valuation too.
Jeff, this is amazing. I think, you can write books about valuation. I probably should write a book about valuation. But besides that, so just to kind of, at the end of this podcast, if you have like two simple advice, about valuation for small businesses, what would they be? How would you finish this?
Yeah, I would say that if you're a small business that's been in business for at least 2 years, get that initial valuation done, get a formal one as a baseline. You're not ready to sell yet, of course, but you need to know what is the trajectory, what is the path that my business is taking? And is that a path that I want? Because in most cases, At the 2-year mark, most businesses either fail or they're just at the cusp of that we're probably going to make it phase. But is it going in the direction that you want it to go? So the valuation will help you understand that. The second thing is find a good business advisor that not only understands how to use a valuation as a tool, they don't have to be a certified appraiser, but if they understand how to use the valuation as a tool to help you run your business, then that's going to help you set up the best circumstances that will attract a buyer someday, so that now you can have an offer that is going to be something that you want. It's going to be something that meets your needs, and it's going to be something that makes you feel good, say a year after the sale, because there's a survey that was done out there that reported something like 75% of business owners regret the sale of their business post selling. And you don't want to be in that category. You know, you don't want to regret selling because you could have gotten more or you could have had a better offer. And the valuation really is at you know, I guess out of all the things that you're doing, if that's the driver for determining value, then understanding how that's done is going to be key. So it's a learning curve. It's just like learning your QuickBooks, you know, learning your operations plan, learning how your vendors get billed. You need to learn how your valuation is being determined.
That's awesome, Jeff. Well, listen, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And by the way, if anybody's interested in valuation, you can always contact Jeff through the VR system or contact us in Atlanta, and we'll connect you with Jeff. We'll be more than glad to. So again, thank you, Jeff, for your time, and looking forward to an incredible 2025 with you, man.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, thanks for having me. I know we could talk valuation and just business stuff all day long, but
That's
hopefully
exactly
this is
we've done
enough that
that.
yeah, I hope this tickles everybody's interest enough to ask a little bit more. But certainly it's an exciting topic. You know, there's a lot of things that drive value of a business, and you'd be surprised what you uncover when you start taking a good hard look at it. So thanks, Ramsey, again. I do appreciate it. Glad you had a good year last year, but looking forward to what you and Claudia are going to do this year too.
Awesome. Thank you very much, sir.